All right, welcome back to Beyond the Barbell. We are brought to you by Reebok, the official outfitter of CrossFit and the CrossFit Games. I am Blair Morrison.
And I am Ben Alderman. And right now we are standing with, I mean, a man of many talents, Tate Fletcher. He has been in 37 movies, I think we just counted. Major Hollywood movies, John Wick, Jurassic World. He's been on, what's up, guys? He has been on recently The Westworld. And not only that, he's also a reluctant entrepreneur, admittedly. He started Caveman Coffee and former UFC. Just, dude, this guy is all around just a tough guy. And he also looks like a stronger, scarier version of Jack Sparrow from a certain angle. You know what I mean? So,
could anyway, blot out the sun.
A donkey Jack Sparrow.
Yeah, man. We
if appreciate Jack Sparrow had AIDS and did a lot of heroin, that'd be me, basically.
Oh, man. So,
well, and we're in the most beautiful setting ever.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, pretty good view up here.
God damn.
But, hey, man, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
So talk a little bit about what brings you to Miami. Like, why are you here at Wodapalooza?
You know, I came here, I mean, I'm here under the wonderful strong wings of Caveman Coffee, but I think that the biggest thing that brings me here is, I mean, what brought Caveman Coffee about was community, and was like that was the biggest aspect of it for us, you know, is coming here and you get, you know, you want to, at a certain point, you go, I only want to be around elevated people that are really trying to go towards some kind of higher consciousness or whatever, and you know, so I'm real careful about who I surround myself with, and so these things are always a blast for me to be at. Yeah.
So how did Caveman Coffee come to be? Well, where was the idea born? Did you have anybody that helped you put it together?
Or? Yeah, man. Me and Keith Jardine were like, we were friends for a long time and training partners for years. And then we were both coffee lovers, and it came out of nutrition talks that Keith and I did. And then Lacey Mackey is our other partner, and Lacey really kind of was like, well, let's. You know, I got really into high-fat ketogenic diets, and that kind of spoke to going in towards in our coffee. And so I would do fasting with coffee and all that. And then Keith met these guys that were refugees from Colombia that are the most beautiful dudes ever that grew up on this coffee farm. And so we just kind of go, well, man, we want, and they had some real special roasts. And I go, well, let's share that with the world. And so we kind of did that. That was where it went.
Nice, man. Well, we just had a hand grenade can, at least I did, Caveman Nitro cold brew.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, that's awesome. Product placement, super good.
You're not going to sleep very well.
Now, how late am I going to be up tonight?
I think that it depends on your coffee intake. Like, you could get
like every other week, I have a cup of coffee.
You're going to be up till tomorrow.
He really said that to me the other day. He said, I really have a cup of coffee maybe every other week. But he only takes it when he needs it. And so I'm like, bro, if you really feel the effects of coffee,
I need it every morning.
Oh, dude, for real, right?
Yeah.
You need it every morning. Man, I think what's really cool about what you're doing is, it just seems like you've kind of integrated all of your passions into a lifestyle that you're just doing all the time.
I don't know how it happened, Ben. I mean, like, for me, I got into a position with, you know, I guess in my soul where I only wanted to do what I loved doing, you know? And because at the end of the day, I saw a lot of miserable people and a lot of people that thought they were doing it right that followed everybody's advice. And then I go, you're following people's advice that are not killing it. And if they're not succeeding, what are you doing following that path? Like, they have a broken trajectory, yet you want to get on it because they're your father or mentor or whatever. And I just thought, man, you know, in meditation and really kind of searching for a long time, I thought all I want is to be happy. And I don't think that's such a bad fucking thing to reach towards. And so, you know, when you're looking at what satisfaction is in your life, I thought, you know, the happier I am is the friendlier I am, the more useful I am, the more productive I am, the more committed I am to whatever it is, whether it's a relationship, a job, whatever endeavor, a conversation. And so I just kind of used that as my marker, and I started going, man, if it feels funny in your chest to be around this person, maybe that's a person that you stop being around. But and then what I found was eventually, like, man, after a while, and we're best friends, man, I get a funny feeling because there's a miscommunication generally. So then my communication gets better because now I'm committed to being a friend to you, and we talk about things that you have the hard conversations. And I think that, like, it kind of started there, and then, you know, through, like, that's what got me into fighting. That's where that all came from, is I was like, well, it makes you nervous to compete. It makes you a little, you know, I mean, you know that. And like, so you go into these things and you're like, I'm going to put myself into these conditions. And then that's through like jiu-jitsu is where I learned that the more I can be uncomfortable, the more I can do a scary thing every day, the more my soul thrives. It's a hard thing to go through, but that hard thing is the actual thing to do, and you need it to have a consequence. It has to be a consequence at the end of it. And when I live a life of consequences, when I live a life of discomfort, the more comfortable, it's one of those paradoxes of life, the more comfortable my life is. Humans, I think, we try to cleave to comfort. We want a nice warm down comforter. We want to have pizza. We want to have a Coke or whatever it is that gets us off in that way and makes us feel. But all those things lead to our death in a certain regard. The closer I am to comfort is akin to death. The deeper I am in consequence, the closer I am to death. I have to live in the middle somewhere, right? And so if I go into sustained, intense moments of consequence and discomfort, man, it makes the whole life, rest of my life richer and fuller. And when I started learning those kind of dynamics of humanity or the nature of being an animal, my life got fuller, and then I only started doing things that I like doing, and then those things. Fuck, I never knew that jiu-jitsu was going to turn into a fight career. I didn't have any idea that wasn't available to us at that time. You know, for guys like Floyd Zord, Joey Villasenor, Keith Jardine, Diego Sanchez, like all of us coming out of New Mexico, that wasn't a thing that was on the plate. That Pride was big and all that, but then Diego gets on the show, and then we things started changing, and so to express our art and to find out, you know, that's really the thing that we were doing, is like, let's find out who you are under these horribly kind of oppressive circumstances. You're in your underwear and you're going to go and fight somebody and maybe get dominated in the most primal way, right, by another human in front of people that you love, people that are hating you, people wanting you to fall, your mom, fucking everybody that is there, and you're under a microscope, under the lights, you can't see anything, and now go perform at your best. And under that condition, I found, wow, man, I evolved. And I think that's what it was in a lot of ways. And so, you know, when people talk about fighting, they look at what it is. Like, everybody has an opinion now about everything, right? And if you're contrary to something, all of a sudden people think that makes you dynamic. It just makes you a dick. That's a pro tip for you. But like the thing, like with Meryl Streep, just came up, right? She said something at some award show about
the Golden Globes,
about MMA, right? And she said she talked a lot about Donald Trump, and then she says, you know, and without the arts and without people from different countries, we're just left with football and MMA. And then all my news feed is a lot of MMA guys. And so it lights up with everybody's opinion about that. And they missed the point and the beauty of what she's saying, that it takes all of us as a community to come together and become beautiful, you know. And she doesn't know anything. All she sees is a bunch of drunk guys slapping each other and yelling, punch them in the face. I can totally understand why she thinks that is a thing that it's not, because she doesn't know anybody like me. She hasn't met Keith Jardine. She doesn't know these people to have conversations, go, here's what drives us and puts us in this position. And what I would say as an actor now, it puts me in exactly the same position as she is when they say action. Now perform. There's 50 people looking at you, and all. It's a real similar thing, and my argument would be that whatever excellence is, if you know what that is, if you're a comedian, a trombone player, whatever, you know what it takes to get there, and it's all kind of the same thing. Like, you have an idea of that kind of excellence, you know? And the only thing that I would put as an aside that is a caveat to that would be, you know, like, guys would talk, I've heard guys say, well, you know, that guy's a warrior in the cage, or he's like, I go, hey, let's not get it twisted, man, because there's no bullets flying. And the job that, like, all those spec ops dudes do, people in the military, that's a different goddamn thing altogether. And those are different conditions. But, like, outside of that, like, you can understand what it is. When you live consequentially, you live a life of inertia that's towards a positive aspect, hopefully, and it grows you.
Yeah, I like the way you describe it, almost like it's on a, I'm imagining it like it's on a spectrum, right? Comfort on one side, consequence on the other, as you call it. And we naturally gravitate towards comfort. So when you live a life of short, intense bursts of consequence, it just kind of pushes the needle over, right? And you get more centered, more middle. And that's where people feel, you feel that centeredness throughout your life in different circumstances. Like, I remember being a kid going camping outdoors, I would feel incredibly centered because I'm more primal. Like, I got to build a fire to stay warm, you know? Like, there's consequence there. Like, you could... There's animals out there. You know that you're not like fully comfortable.
You're in the presence of silence. There's not distraction.
Right. So, yeah, so I like thinking about it that way. And I think, I mean, like you said, bringing up Meryl Streep's comments. Yeah. The more you surround yourself with, the more risk you're going to feel. Anytime you're only surrounded, like you see this all the time on political TV. People are surrounded by people that think like them all the time.
Certainly.
And then... unless you get away from that and invite in other perspectives and you're just not going to be in a consequential environment. You're not going to have any risk to your own soul or ideology.
So I got to ask, so when you start going through this kind of like this maturation process where you enter this state of self-reflection and just really kind of considering everything that you were doing and who you were becoming, did your friends and your, you know, the people around you, they evolve with you, or did your friends have to kind of change and kind of, did you have to find new people that were kind of challenging you in a different way?
Yeah, I feel like I've lived a lot of different lifetimes in this lifetime and had a colorful history and there's a lot of that that I had to leave behind, or there's real consequences to that as well. And you know, I think when I changed my life, I left for Michigan. I went to New Mexico, and there was a huge change in the dynamics of my friends. I didn't have any. I was like rebuilding from scratch. And for me, it's a constant evolution. I have, over these years, a strong picket fence of people that are around me that meet certain criteria, and they meet the criteria of, they'll tell me the truth, even if it's ugly. They'll tell me if I'm being a dick. And I know that there's a love between us that I can take whatever they have to say and go, I'm going to consider that and look at it. And I really value all those people in my circle. And that's a smaller group of people. Probably. I mean, I don't know. You know, I hear these guys a lot of times and I thought, man, that's too bad. They're like, if you can count the people that are your friends on one hand when you die, then you had a good life or whatever. And I think, what a scarcity-driven mindset, man. We've got a community of people that I love around me and that I trust. And the thing about trust and being vulnerable in that way is like, those guys that are on that side of things where there's like only so many people in their life that they love and other, et cetera, et cetera. To me, that's just a broken idea because I feel like there's so much out there. The only thing stopping me is my fear of being vulnerable. And if I'm not scared of being vulnerable anymore, I'm free. And I'm free to love and be loving and be loved. And that's kind of where it all comes back to. The more okay I am with who Tate is, there's nothing that can hurt me. Like, being vulnerable is not a risk. You know, it's a condition of strength in that way, you know? And so, I don't know, I feel like my world opens up more and more and more, and that's why I love all this, you know?
Well, I mean, so you talked about that. What did you have to leave behind? Like, what was the
taint that was going? Dope. I drank every day since I was 16. I ended up in, looking at a bank robbery charge, looking at 25 years. My whole life, it's a life, man. You know, it's like all that. And then circumnavigating out of that. Like, that's why I say several lives. There's that aspect of my life of what all those years were. There's, kind of breaking through that. There's finding jiu-jitsu was a whole different part of that really saved my life in a lot of ways. Going into a fight career out of that. After that, boom, like in 2009, I really started chasing films after I retired from fights. And then, and that's been this whole thing. And then out of that, all these little micro lifetimes of like, you know, I've got like some nightclubs that I'd invested in and that we run out of Texas. And then, we're starting a supplement company. I've got a Caveman Coffee. I've got a gym back in New Mexico. I've got all these different things. And the coolest thing about that is that we've got friends and people that pop up that are like, you know, everybody can be helped in that because it can seem like a dire existence, this humanity, in a lot of ways. And go, I'm going to a job that I have to go to and I live for the weekend. And I gotta say, you need to consider, if you're one of those live for the weekend guys, that your life sucks. And that's your choice, bro. And if you're living to go and blot out your existence for 2 days out of the week through fucking partying, you're fucking up. And you ought to reconsider things. And like, when I started looking at things, like, time is what we got, and it's valuable. How do you want to spend it? I don't want to dread Monday. I don't want to live for the weekend. I want to build a lifetime that I don't have to escape from.
I love that. Build a lifetime you don't have to escape from. That's great.
That's a good
mantra.
I mean,
this is work, and this is a vacation.
Right.
You know, people are like, you like what you do? I'm like, I don't do anything I don't like. Like, I wouldn't do that, you know?
Well, okay, so you're like in, it seems like you're in like perpetual flow state right now. You're killing it. Like, you're doing things that you make you happy. When you feel that way, okay, I am surrounded by people that I trust and I care about and I'm okay being vulnerable with. I've got these different business ventures. Like, what is it? Do you think in terms of goals? Like, hey, this is something I still want
little
to accomplish.
Ones.
Yeah. Like, what?
I mean,
what
I want to be on
things?
A billboard, right? Like, it's like, but how do you do that? You just imagine a billboard? Like, I'm not of that school of thought. What I think about is, like, I want to then, to do that, I need to kill this next audition that I'm doing. And so I do little stuff. Like, I think of it as, like, I throw my hat over the fence, and that fence is just tomorrow. You can't throw your hat over the fence next month. It's, like, right now. And then I crawl over the fence and get my hat and move on from there. And that's kind of like, if I'd have known how hard, if any Lacey or Keith or I would have known how hard starting K-Man Coffee was, all the different stuff we had to learn how to do, we would have never done that. You wouldn't undertake it. You know, you just wouldn't.
And it's overwhelming.
It'd be too much, man. And you'd be like, and I'm not capable. All your shit would come up. But you just go, boom, I'd like to do this. We'll start a little coffee truck. Oh, those beans look cool. And I've been sending them back and forth with other dudes that love single origin coffee. And maybe I could share it with them. And it becomes like, I guess that's the context that I look through it. How can I share this with more people? And so as far as goals, there is some stuff like that. But like right now, the way I travel and all that, like, I don't wish. I was just talking to the dudes over at Gators, man. And they're rad. And I go, I don't wish for like a different life. But I see that it's attractive to have a little cabin in the woods, to have a person you love with you and a couple of dogs and just like, but it's not right now because I can't keep a bamboo plant alive right now. You know what I mean? I'm all over the world. And so it's like right now I'm building this other thing by trying to be great every day and trying to show up. Like, if you hire me for a job, I want you to think that you hired the best guy you could have for that job. If there's somebody better, I want you to get that guy for you. I want you to have him. And with that mindset, I'm free.
How much does caffeine play into this?
Huge. It's huge. I mean, it's
amazing energy.
For me, it's every day, and I start off. Somebody said yesterday, they're like, "Dude, I've already had three coffees," and it's like 11 in the morning. I go, "Yeah, me too. I'm on my third one too." And then I go, "Nah, that's bullshit." Because I had three before I left the hotel room today just to get in the elevator. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then I go through, you know, it's like we were talking about diet earlier and stuff like that. And I stay ketogenic most of the year. But then my hormone levels will shift. My cortisol will spike. Like, after you're ketogenic for 5 or 6 months, you have results. And so in that, I stop. I start fucking doing a lot of carb loading. And I just start to eat towards my body, towards my energy levels more again, and reset myself. But I think the body is constantly resetting itself. And so in that idea, I mean, I drink about 2 gallons of water every day. I
2 gallons of water?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Do you have a catheter in all the time?
I have a really good
diaper.
Bladder. And when I piss, it's always completely clear. but I drink, you know, I probably drink, I don't know, 5 or 10 coffees a day, depending. But then I'll go for 3 weeks and I won't drink any caffeine at all or whatever. And I think that that's the best way. It's like a lot of resetting and all that kind of stuff, you know?
So, you know, you have this obvious passion for all these different things you do, but man, I can see a little twinkle in your eye when you talk about acting.
Sure.
Yeah, what is it about acting that kind of, you know, makes the hair on the back of your neck stand a little bit?
At first, because at first you hear all the things, you're like, you know, it's self-aggrandizing, it's narcissistic, it's like all these things that everybody that isn't doing something with their life has a commentary on, and I'd be like, yeah, I don't want to get judged like that and called that name, you know, like, I want people to be nice to me, and then after a while you go, oh, those are people that are scared to have any consequence in their life or whatever, and so,
we call
you
those
know,
haters.
It's easy to stop caring about what that commentary is and going, I'm just going to do this thing and be proud of it, and for me, it's kind of like when somebody says, are you ready? Fight. And like when somebody yells action to me and it's on me to fuck up, I like that. That's where I found that out. I like having that consequence. And like what you'd said earlier about, you know, you feel like you're in this flow state. I try to put myself in those positions a lot where there's a failure aspect to this that can occur. I'm present to that, and I want to achieve. And in that, I feel, and I don't know what happens with my neurotransmitters, but something goes on for sure. That book, The Rise of Superman, I don't know if you've read that, but goddamn, that gave a language and a kind of a lexicon to ways that I'd felt my whole life. And I go, God, how can I recreate that more? And then it started speaking to what I already knew. Do something scary every day. Risk. Put consequence
be
to your
creative,
actions.
Learn
you know?
Something. Yeah.
Yeah. And even that simple act of being vulnerable in a conversation, fuck you if you don't think there's a consequence in that. I get it. That's scary to do. You know, but so the more authentic I can be, the more I can stay in that flow state as well. And with acting, like when they do that and there's a production and it's $200,000 a day to film this and they don't have time to waste on your little ass because you're not shit to this film tape and you got this action with the main, like, don't fuck it up. And that, when I get that feeling, I love it, man. I love it.
That's so cool, man, to hear that you get a rush like that
from
a little director saying action.
So crazy.
We all fired up, like, we have, like, competitions, right, that we get fired up about, you know what I mean? And we're just like, we can hear them. It's like, you know, Castro or somebody else saying, you know, ready, go, you know what I mean?
Right.
Or whatever.
You're scared.
Yeah. So I have my favorite types of projects or competitions to be involved in. Is there a project that you were involved in on the acting side that you kind of let you know that you had kind of gotten somewhere, that kind of opened a couple doors?
I think that, like, when I did a scene with Denzel in The Equalizer, and I think that was super helpful for me. I'm super grateful for that. You know, I that was fantastic, and I owe that to Keith Willard and these guys that set up the whole scene and were, you know, and allowed me to be the guy that did it, you know. It was really fantastic. And I think but I think I take everything that seriously, where I think all of that is, you know, this is what matters. I'm right here right now. This is what matters. It's not the next film. It's not the last film. And that's what I learned, I think, in wrestling tournaments and stuff. I remember it was so shitty. I had an easy guy I knew anyway the first round. And I was like, cool. And then I was like looking deeper in the key. And I was like, this is a possibility. This guy's a possibility. You start looking like that. Well, fuck, I went and I lost the first match. Guess what? There's no second match, asshole. Way to overthink it. And that's what I would tell guys when I would coach. I go, they go, okay, who else is in the game? This guy's in. I go, we have this match right now. This is the only match you have today. It's this one that's happening right now. And
that's the only guarantee, right?
It's all we have, man, is that. And so, I'd learned through loss that there's a price to be paid, and that's the rest of the tournament. You don't get to see how you would have been against these guys, because you just threw this away because your mind wasn't there. Now, if I'd have lost and my mind was fully there, fair enough, man. That's great. I don't mind that. But I do mind the way that... It's like when you make a lift or you don't make a lift. I was doing jerks with an axle bar the other day. And I was trying, you know... It was like doing something in the first minute. And by the end of the time, however many jerks you could get, right? And so I go and I miss one, what would have put me one over, like little markers, like I want to be better than I did the last round, whatever, whatever. And my mind went somewhere else and I dropped it. And I was pissed at myself, and I wasn't pissed that I missed the lift. I was pissed that I missed the lift because I lost my concentration. I wasn't in control of myself in that minute. And I think it's little things like that, you know. If you make the little minuscule things matter, it's like that quote I love that says, if I can't trust you with the little things, how can I trust you with the big things? And, like, so I try to, like, those moments, they matter to me, you know. And I think that's what makes a difference.
How does, training, you mentioned that you just did a workout with axle ball jerks. How does training fit into your philosophy? Is it something that you do just to kind of, like, blow off steam? Or is it more of, like, an integral part of who you are?
I feel like to be a human, you need to have dominion over yourself spiritually, physically, mentally, and emotionally. And I feel like a lot of people conflate those, especially emotions and intellect. They think it's the same thing. They're like, I'm having a feeling, and so that's what I think about it. And when we see that in politics and stuff all the time, it's not very thoughtful. You know what I mean? It's not very reflective. And so for me, the physical aspect is huge in that way. Just I think as far as being a human, I think it's your duty to know how your body runs. And I think it's a real sadness when it's not, when we see people that are obese or that they can't move very well. A person that can't defend themselves, I think, well, why are you slipping, man? Like, everybody should know some simple basic mechanics of life, right? To have an owner's manual for your body, as it were.
Dude, Socrates said that way back. Socrates said that way back in Greece.
Right, yeah.
You don't know your body.
It's the duty of every citizen. Yeah.
Well, dude, I can see you're a guy with like a ton of momentum, like in everything that you're doing. We have to wrap up because I've got to go compete.
I know, that's so awesome. But kudos to you, man. I can't believe, like, you and Khalifa, you got this full plate all around this thing, and you're competing, which to me is, like, considerable, dude. Like, a lot of respect for you.
Well, let me just say this, because I got a lot of respect for you as well. If you're talking to somebody who's listening and they have no momentum,
right,
they haven't started moving in the right direction yet, Sometimes that's hard. What would you say to them?
I'd say that the little things matter. And I think one of the biggest aspects of that, Ben, is that, you know, people often say to me, they're like, well, CrossFit's so expensive, or X, or there are barriers to entry and things. Man, the cost of not being inspired by people, how much is that worth? And that's the thing, is I've got to be around these people that inspire me. And if I don't care if you're paying $600 for a membership at a gym, if you're around other people that are potent thinkers, a thinker solitary doesn't accomplish a whole lot. You know, we're not Waldens out in the woods. There's no Thoreau here. You know, we need each other. We need to all be better together. And when we do that, you have exponential results. And so I would say get a part of a good community, because I will fail myself. I will not go. I will not finish the reps, the rounds. I won't finish the manuscript. I won't do that thing by myself. I have to have the consequence of what you think about me, of not letting you down. And if I set myself up like that, that's a beautiful conversation. And if I don't have that, I have like a loneliness and an ache of what could have been. And nobody wants to live like that, you know?
Amen, dude. Yeah. So good.
Really, really awesome, man. And thanks. I know people are going to see you, and they have seen you. They may not even know it on certain movies, but they're going to keep seeing you. But if people want to follow you and what you're doing, what's the best way they can kind of keep track of what you're doing?
Mostly just Tate Fletcher. My name's T-A-I-T, and Fletcher, F-L-E-T-C-H-E-R. You can find me on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter or whatever. And Caveman Coffee is my company. We're pretty out there. And I got a Pirate Life Radio is my podcast. And we're on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever. Same. And hopefully I'll meet you one day.
Cool, man. Thank you so much. And if you guys want to check us out, it's always iTunes, Beyond the Barbell. It's a BTB podcast on Instagram. So thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Tate.
Thank you both very much, man. The crowd